Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast, where we help leaders go further, faster. I'm Andy. And while I'm passionate about leadership, I am equally passionate about the intersection of faith and culture. So this fall, I'm going on tour to talk about those very things, and you are invited. I'll be in Seattle, Washington, Austin, Texas, Phoenix, Arizona, and Kansas City, Kansas. This is an all-day ticketed event packed with great actionable content focused on the question of why the modern version of Christianity and the church in particular has become so unnecessarily resistible. Regardless of where you are on the faith spectrum, you will find the day informative, and I promise you will find the day challenging. Registration opens on June 13th, and for that one day only, we are offering you a rate of $99. Again, registration opens on June 13th, and that special rate is available on that day only. So to learn more, visit irresistibletour.com. That's irresistibletour.com, and we hope to see you in one of those cities this fall. Well, once again, I'm excited to have Tim Elmore in the studio with me today. If you did not hear last month's leadership podcast, just hit pause on this one and go back and listen, because today we're continuing this conversation with my friend of 20 plus years, Dr. Tim Elmore. Tim, welcome back.
Great to be with you.
Again, Tim is the president and founder of Growing Leaders. He's a best-selling author, an international speaker, a world-renowned expert on Generation Y and Generation Z, and I don't know what comes after Generation Z. Do we go back to A?
Double A. No, actually, they're calling it the Alpha Generation. These kids that are just being born now, starting a brand new generation. Yeah.
So we won't be around for
the
alphabet again, will we?
We'll be great grandparents.
Tim uses his insight and his research to equip leaders, educators, coaches, parents, really any adult who's trying to impart practical life skills to younger leaders or the leaders that are coming along behind him. Again, I've known Tim for over 20 years, and today we're going to continue our discussion that we began last time on generational diversity. Generational diversity. Again, we hear so much about diversity, but we don't hear much about generational diversity, which I think makes our conversation today very unique. As I said last month, the reason Tim's here is we had a gathering of about 600 or 700 business leaders, and Tim spoke, and as I sat there taking notes as fast as I could, I thought, why have I not had Tim on the podcast to talk about this? So, Tim, for those who did not take my advice and hit pause and go back and listen to last month's podcast, would you just catch us up a little bit and give us the overview of what you mean when you talk about generational diversity in the marketplace?
Yeah, Andy, you're spot on. We do talk a lot about diversity today. It's a hot topic, especially in the day we live in. So in workplaces, they're complex because there's ethnic diversity, there's gender diversity, but I think just as real is generational diversity. And the reason it's so real is because the generations, you know, when we were growing up, we start hearing the term generation gap. Remember the baby boomers back in the 60s? Well, the gap is even wider now because our devices have completely siloed us. Mm-hmm. So this is interesting. Psychologists started researching decades ago, and the question they asked American people were, if you had an emergency, do you have a close friend that you're close enough to, you could call the middle of the night emergency? And the average answer was, I got five people. Today, the average answer is zero. I don't have anybody. So we're more private. We're more alone. More Americans live alone, eat alone. It's kind of scary, actually, because I think we're social beings. But it's work.
Yeah.
Relationships are work.
Yeah.
So we just get on our phone. We fub, P-H-U-B-B-I-N-G, fubbing. If I'm in an elevator, instead of talking to the people around me, I'm looking at my, you know.
Yep.
We do that. We do, too. So we're permitted to be socially lazy, and if we're socially lazy, we're probably going to drop in our EQ, our emotional intelligence.
And when you talk about generational diversity, you're talking specifically about this was news to me that in the marketplace today, or in the workplace today, or in the average office, there are four generations working together, speaking a different language with different expectations, with a different worldview because of the worldview they were born into. So real quick, catch us up on those four.
Yeah. Okay. So I was just with the Atlanta Braves, and they have four generations from the oldest peanut vendor, you know, in the stadium who's in his late 70s. So it'd be the builder generation that grew up during the Great Depression, World War II. The baby boomers who boomed right after World War II up until 1964, 65, when the birth control pill came out. Mm-hmm. Then it was the baby busters, 65 to 81, 82. And the baby busters were the Gen Xers, are the Gen Xers. And then the millennials, which we've been talking about now for 18, 19 years. And now the kids, the new kids on the block, are Generation Z. They're the ones that have grown up in the 21st century.
Mm. Yeah. Now, last time we talked about expectations, we're not going to go back and review all of that. Yeah. But moving forward, let's talk about communicating to these different generations. Because again, as we said last time, I expect people to expect what I expect, mm-hmm. and I'm going to communicate to people the way I want people to communicate to me. Yeah. And whereas we learn to get past some of that in marriage, but we are generally married to people of our same group, what does it look like to communicate effectively to these four different groups? And you've done some study on this. I thought this was fascinating.
Well, it is interesting to me too. Let me set this up by saying this. When you realize there are different expectations in the office, it's primarily because the narrative they brought with them is different perhaps than your narrative. Mm-hmm. So the example I like to think of in my own brain is if I tell my wife I'm going to meet her for dinner at 7:30 and I show up at 7:40, it's not a big conversation. If I show up at 9:30, that's a big conversation. And it's not that my wife cannot live without me till 9. The expectation wasn't there. So just know, leaders out there, you've got to know what are they thinking, not what's right, what are they thinking, and then bridge that gap.
We got to build bridges. What are they expecting? Yeah.
That's right. Yeah, expectations. So let's talk about communication. So think about if it's a baby boomer in front of you and you're going to read them before you lead them, like we talked about last podcast, the boomers might be thinking, just give me the bottom line. You know, I'm aging. I don't have much time here. Just give me the bottom line. And because we're boomers, we really don't want to hear a lot of fluff. We've been through the war. Just get it to me. So give me the bottom line. Gen X might say, keep it real. So be honest, be authentic.
No hype.
That's right. No hype. Keep it authentic. Yep. Huge. Millennials might say, make it interactive. Because their whole world has been interactive. So I don't need a boss just yakking at me. You listen too, you know, and that's, there's a lot of merit to that.
Make it conversational.
Yeah. And then Gen Z, the youngest kids, keep it short. So attention spans for teenagers in the year 2000 are 12 seconds long. So that's even kind of short.
12 seconds.
And that was year 2000. Today.
How do you teach algebra too?
Yeah.
To a group whose attention span is 12
seconds. You know what? That's the $50,000 question. But here's what I always say to that. It's not that they can't pay attention longer. They'll binge watch Game of Thrones on Netflix for hours.
Right.
They can't, but we got to engage them. So we're not just thinking about what we're saying. We're thinking about how we say it. You think about this all the time as a communicator.
Yep.
How do I say this? So attention spans today for a teenager, 8 seconds long. Goldfish are 9. So it'd be better to be in front of a goldfish than a teenager right now. So anyway, so Gen Z is keep it short. And so you see the difference. So give me the bottom line, keep it real, make it interactive, keep it short. I just need to be aware of that when I'm in front of a team member.
Well, and not a team member. Now imagine you're sitting in front of a group of 12 team members and you're trying to keep everybody engaged in the same conversation.
Yeah.
I would almost need this list in front of me, really, and to ask the question in different ways or to answer the question different ways. Okay, that's the communication piece. I thought this was so helpful too. In fact, this was some of the most helpful stuff. You talked about how to motivate these four groups, what motivates each of them. And again, there are exceptions to every rule.
Yeah.
But talk a little bit about, we've talked about expectations, communication, motivation.
Yeah. So motivation is different. If you think about the team members that work alongside you, listeners, you might think, oh, yeah, they might be motivated differently. So a baby boomer might say, I want a corner office with a position and a bonus. You know, that was the love language of the baby boomer
for the last
15, 20 years. And if you understand them, that's what you do. For Gen X, it might be freedom to work on my own terms. Don't babysit me. Don't micromanage me. I've been around a little while. Not the oldest here, but I'm
I need a laptop and a Starbucks card.
That's right.
And leave me alone. Yeah. How much do we see that? Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Yes. Yeah. So for millennials, it might be meaningful work serving people. So millennials are still young professionals, and they want to feel like their work matters.
Yeah.
I don't want to make widgets on an assembly line. Some might, but most would want that. So make sure you connect the dots, employers, to the work you're doing, even if it is widgets, and helping the community. Somehow changing the world. You know, all those cliches we'd say. The kids want to feel like young adults want to feel like they are. Yeah. And then for Gen Z, I have found as I've worked with middle school and high school kids, let me do it on a screen my way. So even applications are more on a screen. They're texting. In fact, sometimes, Andy, we're finding teenagers will text that they're quitting the job. Wow. And some will just ghost their employer. You know what ghosting is. So ghosting, let's just say two high schoolers are dating each other, and the conversation on the phone kind of goes sideways. Well, one will just ghost the other. Instead of having a hard conversation and breaking up, they'll just not show up. I talked to a high school female, sophomore in high school lately, and I said, are you guys still dating? And she goes,
I don't
think so.
Yeah. I recently heard that.
Yeah.
Yeah. A 21-year-old. Yeah.
Interesting.
I'm not sure. I'm like, what? You're not sure?
Mm-hmm.
And then I made the mistake of saying, why don't you call her? And he looked at me like, call?
Are you a dinosaur?
Yell?
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
And then I just, anyway.
You gave up.
I gave up.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Well, and you know.
Use your thumbs and call her. Yeah. Sorry.
That's right. Well, I would hasten to add, that's a picture, Andy, of all of us in some ways. I believe as I look at the data on society today, there's many good things happening. I love smart technology. All of that's awesome. But I got to tell you, I think we're becoming socially lazier. It's easier just to fub or ghost or digital diss. I hear parents talking about their toddler at home dissing Alexa. Talking to Alexa with rude terms because they, you know, Alexa, you're so stupid. You know, go, you can't talk to Sally that way when you're your friend. So we're just in a new day where we got to rethink how do we teach relationships.
So in your office, because you surround yourself with young people because you're mentoring and coaching professionally and again, that's who you involved in your organization.
Yeah.
How do you deal with that? I mean, there are things that have to be done.
Yeah.
And here's somebody who would rather do it on their own time with their own apps and they want to figure it out themselves. How do you create that space for them? Because you don't want to demotivate.
Yes.
You don't want to say, the good news is you get your own office and they're like, why would I want one of those?
That's right, exactly.
That's what my grandfather had.
Yeah.
So how do you navigate
Here's
that personally?
Here's what we've done. We have a ton of young people in our office. What we've done is we first met and had this very discussion. We laugh at ourselves. We go, oh my gosh, that's so true. I was
that's
born
smart.
Here. And so after we get done laughing at ourselves and with ourselves, then we go, okay, what would be your preferred way to communicate in the office? Well, the Xers and boomers go email and, you know, millennials are going email. That's for old people. Oh yeah, you are old people. So we start meeting in the middle. So Google Docs would be big in many offices right now. We're all sharing on the same doc. I think we've got to have the conversation, how do we meet in the middle? Because we need to take into account that veteran who's actually my manager, but the new ways that are coming, which is me, perhaps, if I'm 25, I think we got to meet in the middle. And that's what families do that work. I think that's what ball clubs do that work.
Right. And there's no right or wrong in terms of what we're talking about. But if you're the boss, it can feel wrong. It can feel inefficient.
Yes.
And then I think this is the thing, you know, my generation has to make sure we're honest about. If it's not easy for us, we want everybody to adapt in our direction.
Yeah, that's right.
And when you're the oldest person in the room and you're expecting people to adapt in your direction, number one, they're not. Number two, it's the wrong direction, right?
That's right, yeah.
And I've learned. I've learned the hard way and I've learned the easy way and I've learned to just keep my mouth shut and then to circle back around and say, what?
Yeah.
What did we just talk about? I was nodding, but what were...
That's right.
And again, nobody wants to appear to be stupid. But again, to motivate people and inspire people, you have to speak to your point last time. Yeah. We have to speak their language and it does feel like a foreign language sometimes and it feels like a foreign country sometimes.
Yeah.
All right. So we've talked about motivation, communication, expectations. And then this is a big one because everybody listening has probably lost a good, you know, employee or two over the whole evaluation and feedback loop because sometimes we don't give it. We give it the wrong way. This is always difficult no matter what, even
That's
if we're the same age.
Yes.
But when it comes to feedback and evaluation and coaching people forward, this is a big deal. So how does this look?
The first step I take in my mind is I think about the narrative they have coming in and what's been their background.
Yep. And if you didn't hear last month's podcast, have I mentioned last month's podcast?
Yes.
You need
yes,
it
I
because
think you
what Tim shared on again, this whole background piece is so important, but we don't have time to review all that. But but go ahead.
So say you got a baby boomer and you got to do evaluation or feedback with them. It's never easy, but I think a boomer would be quite used to do it annually and with full documentation, you know, that sort
the
of thing.
Annual review.
That's right. Exactly. That's what we're used to. And yet most organizations I talk to don't do much of that anymore, but that's what the boomer might have been used to.
Yep.
For the Gen Xers, it would be steady, honest, and please share all the pros and cons. So remember, that's the keep it real generation. Be authentic. So they want you to be honest. They don't want you to. In fact, they can sniff out that you're kind of making stuff up. They're actually a really good person. That's just be real. For millennials, immediately, frequently, and be nice. So we started finding this out. Actually,
wait, say that again. Immediately.
Yeah.
Frequently.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because so they need constant affirmation.
Constant feedback. Think about a video game. I get feedback all the time.
Wow.
So I know one company that will remain nameless here in Atlanta that just hired praise consultants.
What?
Because their HR department could not keep up with the feedback and affirmation that was necessary for their gobs of 20-something employees that needed.
And what does a praise consultant do?
They come in and affirm, and they're going around instantly and immediately saying, great job, great job, great job, great job. I know, Andy, I know. It blows
even my producer is shaking her head on the other side of the glass wall.
Yeah, yeah.
Now she has her face in her hands.
Yes, I know.
And this is a real thing.
Yeah, it is. In fact, can I just take a
and listen to me respond to that as a boomer, right?
Yeah. Oh, and see, that's just it. Boomers just get frustrated and grit their teeth and shake their
–
like I'm
job.
Doing right now.
Yeah. Be grateful you have a job.
Yeah.
My dad would
say. Yes, that's true. And my dad as well. Yeah. My dad has saved every rubber band and plastic bag known to man. It's up in the attic right now. I would just say we've got to remember that the frustration might be the first emotion we feel. In fact, this is interesting. Growing Leaders, our organization, just partnered with the Harris Poll and surveyed thousands of American adults across the country talking about the next generation. And we asked the question, what's the number one emotion you feel when you think about the next generation? And we gave them lots of options, hope, excitement, frustration. Number one, far and away, was concern. They're just concerned the kids will not be ready.
And when you say kids, you mean which generation are you talking about?
It would be under 21 years old.
Okay.
So not 25 or whatever. But they're thinking of the kids that are still in school, still forming. Concern, fear was high. Frustration was high. And sometimes the frustration is, I don't get this cross-cultural relationship I am having right now. And I just wish you would just do what I ask you to do.
Mm-hmm. I wish you would be like me.
Yeah. I think that's what happens.
And that scares them to death. I don't want to be like you. Well, I didn't want to be like the people ahead of me either.
It's so true. I'm so glad you said that, because if we're real, we don't like those old.
Yeah, none of this is that unique in some ways.
Yeah.
We just have more data.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And we have more segmentation in the marketplace that we're having to navigate, which is why we're having this conversation. So anyway, feedback and evaluations.
Yeah.
Boomers want it annually.
Full documentation. Extra steady, honest. Please share all the pros.
Yep.
Pros and cons. Millennials, immediately, frequently, be nice.
Yeah.
Remember, they were the generation that got trophies just for showing up on the soccer
team. Oh, my goodness.
It
drove me crazy in baseball.
Yeah, I know.
I really wanted to go take my son's trophies away.
Yeah.
Like, you don't get – you lost. We lost.
Yes. Yes.
I know. Yeah.
Well, and you're thinking ahead. You're going, your employer's not going to say that one day. Yeah.
Yep.
Now, with Gen Z, once again, this will not surprise you. Gen Z are screenagers, so short and on a screen. I actually think we're going to migrate toward, for better or for worse, doing a lot of instant feedback that's short, very, very short, and on a screen, because that's their natural habitat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, do we need face-to-face? Of course we do, to build emotional intelligence. But I think our feedback might be more and more, hey, this is where I am, talk my language, go to my place. And again, it differs based on the generation.
Now, that's already happening.
Yeah.
I think about, because I watch so many of our communicators on video or on my phone. And how do I give feedback? I pick up my phone and I text.
Yeah.
Or my son did a presentation last night in California.
Oh, wow.
My wife said it went great, sent me a picture. What did I do? I picked up my phone and I texted. Mom said it did great. Here's a picture somebody took.
Yeah.
So that's – of course that's going to happen because it's instant.
Yeah.
But in terms of whereas for me, I may rather hear a voicemail of somebody. I want to hear their voice.
Yes. Yeah.
For Generation Z, it's going to be quicker. It's instant and it may mean as much.
Yeah.
And they don't want to answer their phone anyway.
If you think again, that's just it. If you think again, a screen doesn't require my emotions to be involved. I might get emotional, but it's
that's what emoji cons are for.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right. Tears coming down the cheeks as I'm laughing.
Yes.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. And then we have to do five of them because, you know, we're in a day of hyperbole. So,
all right. This is all so helpful. Again, I know what our listeners are thinking. What do I do with this? Just keep listening.
Yeah.
Dealing with change.
Yeah.
Because in organizational life, there are interruptions.
Oh,
there's change.
Yeah.
You have to go back. I mean, so dealing with change.
All right. So let's think about baby boomers. They're the ones that are, you know, my gosh, late 50s into the 60s, early 70s. Boomers might say when it's time to change, well, it worked fine the way we'd done it in the past. Right. Why you change it? In fact, I came up with that old idea, which means I'm personally vested in that old idea. For Gen X, it might be, I love change when it's my idea. So in our research, we find Gen X, like most humans, would say, I'm not minding change as long as I thought of it and I'm getting ready for it. For millennials, I actually want change every 3 months.
So,
lots and lots and lots of change. And then, of course, we just joked about this. For Gen Z, it might be, please keep in mind my attention span is 8 seconds.
Did something change?
Did something change? It's important for employers to know this, I think. We now are talking about a gig economy that's out there. I had an Atlanta employer say to me recently, I think the corporate ladder has become the corporate lily pad. So it's gigs, they're hopping around like a frog, different gigs, maybe gigs in the same company, but it also could be I'm a year and a half there, 2 years there. And
everybody has a side hustle.
Yes, that's
right. Because I can start my own thing for free, market it for free all over the world, I think.
That's exactly
right. So, I mean, just about everybody I know in their 20s.
Side
has
hustle.
Something they're either starting or thinking about starting or just shut down and thinking about starting a new one, which I think is great.
I do too. I love it.
But we didn't have that opportunity. Mm-hmm. There was no such thing unless it was a part-time job after your
mowing lawns.
Yeah, that was our side hustle. Exactly. Come home smelling terrible. Tim, when I heard you present this material, you gave us a list of things to help us differentiate specifically between Gen Y and Gen Z, the millennials and Gen Z.
Yes.
And I think for some of us in upper management and leadership, that's the differentiation that may be most helpful. Can you do that real quickly?
Yeah, absolutely. So as we see millennials morph into the youth generation of Gen Z.
Because millennials is age 32, 33.
Yeah. They're young professionals in their 20s and early 30s.
Gotcha.
Confidence seems to be morphing into caution, probably due to the economic times we've seen the last 17.
So the millennials, more
confidence. Gen Z, more caution.
Okay.
Yeah. Idealism is morphing into pragmatism. That's not all bad, but Gen Z would be much more pragmatic. They don't assume they're going to be VP by 26 years old, you know.
Right. A little bit more pessimistic.
Yeah, that's right. A little more cynical. Yeah. Viral posts are morphing into vanishing ones. So whereas the millennials might have posted something that went viral, hoping their boss didn't see it, and he did, and they got let go. Mm-hmm. Gen Z goes, I'm going to do it on Snapchat. It'll go away in 9 seconds.
However, you know, Snapchat's already gone away.
That's right.
I know.
But
we get the point.
Yes. Okay.
Yes. I do.
Yes. Spending money is morphing into saving money. Again, probably due to the times, but Gen Z is way better at saving money than the millennials who accrued the largest tuition debt in the history of America.
That's one of those things that my generation, your generation, we cannot comprehend. I lived in my parents' basement and went to college and worked.
Yeah.
There was no option of borrowing money to go. Yeah. Of course, I lived in Atlanta, so there were some options close by. But anyway, keep going.
Yeah. Consuming media is morphing into creating media. So whereas a millennial high school kid 10 years ago might have come home and watched YouTube videos for 3 hours, Gen Z goes, I want to make those videos. Hmm. We need to capitalize on that. Attacking an education is morphing into hacking one. So a Gen Z kid might know of a millennial that just bought into what mom and dad said, which was go to Auburn University. Mm-hmm. You'll get a great job. Well, they graduated and didn't get the great job right away. And so Gen Z goes, I'm going to hack my way through this post-secondary experience, just doing MOOCs and mentors and internships, and it's a hodgepodge.
Piece it together.
Yeah, that's right. Piece it together. Text messages are morphing into iconic messages. So instead of just messaging with mere words, it's now icons, emojis, bitmojis, images. We got to speak that language. And then lastly, this is the scariest one, saddest one. Anticipation is morphing into anxiety. According to Dr. Robert Leahy, he's a cognitive therapist. He says the average teenager in America today experiences the same level of anxiety as a psychiatric patient did in the 1950s.
Wait, what? Say that again?
Yeah. The average teenager in America experiences the same level of anxiety as a psych patient did in the 1950s. You hear about depression and anxiety a lot. It's because I think they're overwhelmed. When you track the rise of anxiety and depression in young people today, it directly parallels the rise in social media. I'm not trying to fit a demon under every bush, but I'm just telling you, we were not meant to take in 10,000 messages a day.
Where I've experienced that, and maybe you have too, for our generation, I don't think we were equipped to take in as much news.
Yes,
I mean,
period.
I don't just know what's going on in my community or even my country. Yeah. I know what's going on in the world all at the same time. And then add to that the pressure of keeping up with everybody on Instagram who's having a wonderful day and whose families look perfect. I mean, even, you know, for me, I have to push back from that. So again, at 15, 17, 18 years old, that would create some high anxiety.
I just spoke to a director of performance for an NBA basketball team who said, our players are lonely and they're sad and unhappy. And you think, wait, with all that money?
NBA?
NBA. Professional.
Not college. NBA.
Right, right. And I'm thinking it's just they're looking at their social media feeds at halftime, and they should not be looking at that. So this may sound like your grandpa right now, but we need to get off the phone and back into face-to-face relationships at least more often for it to be well adjusted. So that would be the shifts that I think we're seeing happening across the country.
So let's talk, as we wrap this up, let's talk about some things that we can do, some principles that maybe leaders can engage with in light of all this. Because again, I don't think anybody listening would argue. They may be upset, but you can't argue. I mean, this is – we can all think of our own illustrations. This explains so much of what we experience at home, in culture, and especially at work. So what are the takeaways? And I thought this – again, you shared this with the group a few weeks ago, and it was so practical, and especially this first one because I've heard you talk about this before. So what do we do?
All right. So There's about four images I want to share, metaphors, if you will, that I just keep in my mind. I think you keep pictures in your mind too, Andy. The first one is so helpful. In light of this topic especially, play chess, not checkers. So the image is chess and checkers, and our habitudes are literally a picture of someone playing chess. But here's the difference. If you opened up a box of checkers and then you opened up a box of chess, you'd see the same game board. So you could be tempted to think, same game. That's not true. When I play the game of checkers, all my pieces look alike, move alike.
Yep.
I treat them all alike. When I play the game of chess, if I have any hope of winning the game, I have to know what each piece can do. So I just believe that effective leaders play chess with their people, not checkers. Mm. They connect with others at the uniqueness of their personality and their strength. And
their generation.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's exactly right. So I understand. And my leader, if I'm the other person, my leader understands me. I want to lean into her or him.
Yep.
So Marcus Buckingham talked about this. We had this conversation probably over breakfast a long time ago.
Yep.
But it's we got to do. Now, here's the problem. I don't think I said anything that every listener didn't know already. I just gave you an image to remember it. But if we know it, why don't we do it? I think I know why. Which of those two games, chess or checkers, usually takes longer to play?
Yeah, chess takes longer, and you have to think more. Checkers, I don't have to think.
We just want to tell people what to do.
Yeah.
So playing chess is harder and longer, but it's worth it. All right, so that's image number one. Leaders got to play chess, not checkers, with their people.
Which means we have to be students, not just—
That's right.
We have to be students of, again, not just the individuals, but remembering or keeping in mind this template of where they've come from and which generation they are.
That's exactly right.
Second one?
Yep. The second one is, I love this image. It's called the velvet-covered brick. To me, this is the single most effective image, at least in my brain. Andy, behind my desk in my office, I've got a velvet-covered brick. I got a brick that's covered with velvet. I had a school principal give it to me. Here's the deal. Picture in your minds, listeners, a velvet brick. On the outside, it's soft, smooth, silky, feels good when you rub it against your skin. But inside, kind of cold, hard.
Yeah, it's a brick.
It's hard, yeah. I believe every effective leader is velvet and brick. Tough and tender, responsive and demanding. Those are the terms we used when we talked at the breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Responsiveness is, I believe in you. I got your back. I support you. I accept you just the way you are. All those things every human being heart needs inside from a caring adult or a leader, an employer. But inside, that's the brick. Here's the standard we're meeting. Here's the goal we're reaching. And we're not going to dilute it because it seems hard on Tuesday.
Here's what I expect.
Yeah.
So, I think you can do it.
Yeah, that's exactly right. In fact, velvet is I believe in you. Brick is because I believe in you. I'm not letting you settle for less. And that's a good parent, isn't it?
Yeah.
So all I would say, listeners, is your personality tends to be a little bit more velvet, a little bit more brick. You need to balance it out. We need to be thinking, do they need velvet from me or brick from me right now?
When I was in college, I took several speech classes, public speaking.
Yeah.
And I only remember one thing from one professor, and it was this. I did a speech. You know, everybody takes speech class. Yeah. And so my speech was way better than everybody else's, I thought, even by just the way he was and I got a B. And there was a guy in our class I knew, and he got an A, and it wasn't that good.
Yeah.
And the professor was named Dr. Rifkin. And this is all I remember. I remember going up after class. I didn't want to make a big deal. I said, Dr. Rifkin, I got a B. And, you know, I don't want to compare.
Yeah. Yeah.
He looked at me. He said, you can do better.
Oh.
You can do better.
Yeah.
That's all I remember from
– wow.
That's about all I remember from college.
Yes. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. But it's the velvet brick. I mean,
that's
he was
right.
nice and kind.
That's exactly
but
right.
But, Andy, I'm not going to
– Yeah.
I'm not going to compare your performance mm-hmm. to other performance when I think you have more in you.
Yeah.
You get a B.
Yeah.
I'm talking about it all these years later.
Yeah.
So they're, you know.
I love that. That's so cool. That's a great picture.
You can use that, Tom.
Thank you. I appreciate that. That's good.
All right. The third one.
Third one. This is one of our newer habitude images, but I just love it because feedback is so difficult for leaders and receivers.
Yep.
Surgeons and vampires. So I know that's an odd combo. So listeners, keep in your mind, picture a surgeon, picture a vampire. First of all, you may not think about this, but those two guys have a lot in common, actually. We don't look forward to either one of them coming our way.
Right.
They both draw blood. It's kind of a painful experience, but they lead to completely different outcomes because they're two different individuals. Think about a vampire. The last 20 years, we've had umpteen television shows come out about vampires.
Right.
Vampires work in a darkened room. They sneak up on you. You don't realize what's about to happen. They attack you. They bite you. This is figuratively speaking. They bite you and you never recover.
Yeah. They suck the life out of you.
That's exactly right.
Literally.
So giving feedback. I think we've all been given feedback as people from a vampire. Mm. And they were venting. They were just mad.
Yep.
And
they waited too long.
That's right. That's
and
right.
They
waited too long.
Backed up the truck and dumped it on us. Yeah.
Which is another metaphor.
Yes.
Surgeons, on the other hand, think about this. Surgeons spend a lot of time getting ready. They prepare for this. It's a well-lit room. Everybody knows what's about to happen.
Mm.
And the surgeon doesn't slice up your whole body. He just takes out that one tumor. We're not arguing that you have horrible character. We're saying we're just going to remove this one little tumor.
Mm.
I'm telling you, everybody wants a surgeon if it's going to have to come, if we're going to get any feedback.
Wow.
So – huge.
That's and my, a little bit convicting.
Let's keep moving. Yeah.
before I learn something.
When I was writing this stuff, I thought, I am naturally a vampire. And I think I'm a pretty nice guy, but you know who you see it most with? Your kids.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh. Because we know them too well. They know us.
We want the best for them. We want them to reach their full potential and not embarrass us in public. And
that's exactly right. In that order, of course. Yeah, that's right. But can I give you a couple words, leaders listening? I think it's going to be that your motivation for giving feedback is either relief or belief. Here's what I mean by that. If I'm just venting, I'm just relieving myself of tension. If I'm truly saying, but I love this guy or this gal, she's so good. Deep down, I know she's good. I do it out of belief. The feel is different on the recipient's end. I just feel like Andy, he's mad at me, but I think it's because he actually thinks I can do this.
Hmm.
So can I share one bit of data? This is so powerful. Several researchers from Ivy League schools like Princeton, Yale, Harvard got together and they began giving feedback to teenagers on homework assignments. And they were put on little post-it notes, but they tried all kinds of feedback to test what would get the best response. More effort, if you will, on the part of the student. One answer won out by a measurable difference. In fact, it was so better than all the others, the researchers called it magical. Here was the statement. And I don't think the words are magical, but the thought is.
I'm tempted to say, and if you want to know what that is, send us $14.95 and Tim, because I feel like what you're about to tell us is very valuable.
It's magical. Yeah,
and here
right.
it is for free. Okay.
Yeah, right.
What was it?
All right. Here's the comments. I'm giving you this feedback because I have high expectations of you.
Wow.
And I know you can reach them. Especially males that had never heard another male say that.
Hmm.
Either 40% more effort, which was way more than the others, up to 320% for minorities.
But think about it. That's what my professor in college did.
Yes.
I'm giving
you
a B.
That's right.
Because
you, can do
you didn't give me A effort, and I know you've got A effort in you. Wow.
Yeah, that's huge.
So say it again.
I'm giving you these comments because I have high expectations of you, and I know you can reach them.
That's powerful.
It's brilliant.
Yeah.
Yeah. The last image I want to give you is so simple, but it might be a memorable one. It's simply called a bridge, not a wall. When I got to thinking about what we tend to build in relationships, it is so much easier and quicker to build a wall with another person than a bridge. In fact, if you think about engineering, our Georgia Tech buddies, it's easier to build a wall, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But a bridge, oh my gosh, lots of engineering, lots of work, lots of time, lots of money. But if you think about it with relationships, We tend to build walls with people that are unlike us.
Yep.
We tend to like those who are like us. I mean, that's just the way it works. It's human beings. In fact, research was done on preschool kids. It's true about four-year-olds. So here's what I would say. If there's someone in your office or on your team or in your family that you would say, we are having a hard time getting along, I would say, go after them like an engineer and build a bridge that takes longer, but you're in it to win it. And it's tougher, but we got to do this. And the people that I know that do this, the recipient knows you're taking time. This is effort. This is not easy. I'm not making it easy for you, sometimes they might say.
Yep.
But boy, Andy, you and I bet both could list stories of people that when we went after them like this, it paid great dividends.
Or when they came after us that way.
Yes.
Yeah, and build influence with us.
Yeah.
So to place all this in context, every day we're walking into business environments, marketplace environments, where there's basically four generations all speaking a little bit different language. Mm-hmm. We're attracted to some. We're intimidated by others.
Yeah.
And the older I get, the more intimidated I become. Mm-hmm. You know, I began my career speaking to high school students, and I was a sought-after speaker for high school students. High school students scare me to death. That's my least favorite group to talk to, and it used to be my favorite group to talk to because, again, this divide makes me feel like I can't speak their language and they don't understand mine.
Yeah.
So with all of that in mind, these four approaches, chess and checkers, velvet-covered brick, surges and vampires, and then build a bridge, not a wall, those are avenues to where regardless of where we fall in that continuum of generations, we can begin to move in the right direction, learn the language, and create enough space for the other person to learn ours as well. And then going back from to what we said last time and this time in terms of how we communicate, what we expect, all those things make this not easy, but certainly easier. And for those of us who want to be great leaders, we have to do this unless we just want to be surrounded with people who are like us.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
you know, that doesn't build a strong and balanced organization. So, Tim, at the end of the presentation you did for the leaders in our organization a few weeks ago, you gave us an assignment that was so powerful that brought all of this into focus. So would you extend that to our podcast listeners?
Absolutely.
Or just give them a little bit of a homework assignment?
Okay. Your homework assignment, should you decide to take it here,
they will.
Is reverse mentoring. So it's kind of an odd term, but I think it was Jack Welch that first made this popular way back in the 1990s when computers first came out and he was in charge of GE. He started taking his newly hired young people right out of college who understood technology a little bit better than the 50-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you need to get with our older people and teach them how to do this. And it was quite the opposite of what you normally expect. So it formed a reverse mentoring relationship. So here's the assignment. Get with somebody that's a different generation than you. In fact, the more distant, the better.
Hmm.
And I would say both of you add value to the other. First of all, share stories, just swap stories. A lot of common ground is going to take place if you hear each other's story. But then if you're young, say, tell me how to get along here. Tell me what this company is all about. How do I make it here? How do I succeed? Oh my gosh, that 58-year-old will say, boy, do I have stuff to share with you.
Yeah, run.
But that may be.
Get out while you can.
Yeah.
No, just kidding. Hopefully.
But 58-year-old, that 22-year-old might go, I've got an app we could use to market this company better. Or I know the latest thing that's coming down the pike in terms of
if
social
media. If we ask. They love talking about that stuff.
So both are the mentor and both are the mentee. This adds
it begins
dignity.
With an invitation and with questions, right?
It really does.
And it can go up or down.
That's exactly right. And I like them when they go both ways. So we've done this in our office. We have board members mentoring our young 25-year-old team members, and they're having a ball because both are learning from each other. Mm-hmm. That's the way life's supposed to be, I think. It really
and
is.
And the reason I think this is so helpful is if I'm not intentional with that, again, I gravitate toward the people who are like me because they like me, and it's easy. And we like the same thing, same music. But being intentional about these, you know, in some organizations, they'll call them skip level meetings, but generally that's skipping down a level in the organization. This is skip generational.
That's
meeting.
Right. It's that, yeah.
And it's ask and listen. And that's something we can all do.
Absolutely.
Tim, as we wrap up, we have a friend in common who's a quite famous person in the organizational world, Angela Arendts. And she did something when she was with Burberry way back years ago.
Yeah.
And I think it's a great way to wrap this up and a great illustration of a lot of what you've just been talking about.
Yeah, it really is. So Angela is a great example of this reverse mentoring thing. When she was asked to move from the United States over to London and take over Burberry Coats, you know, it's a very high-end trench coat that they were selling selling for a couple thousand dollars.
Actually, I didn't know that until someone told me, but yes.
Okay. There you go. You're a very high culture man. So Angela came in, and I love the fact that after she met the fellow executives, the first step she took was to meet with the youngest, most inexperienced team members, not the most experienced and oldest,
right,
which you typically do. And when she met with them, she said, you know, our brand is on a decline, not an incline. What do we need to do? What do you think we need to do to reach your generation here? And they came up with loads of ideas. First of all, they'd never been asked before, so they came up with loads of ideas, interns included. And one of the ideas they came up with was the art of the trench. And the art of the trench was simply an idea where on their website, Burberry's website, there's a page that you can post pictures of yourself in a Burberry coat.
Hmm.
Well, 20-somethings love to post pictures of themselves in coats. So,
and the people who could actually afford the coats would never dream of doing such a thing, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So it attracted a whole new batch of customers, and the brand began to take off. But what I love is this is counterintuitive to what you typically think.
Yep.
You typically think, I'm going to meet with my executives, come up with a plan, tell the interns to do it.
Yep.
She met with the interns and the younger employees and said, we've got the budget. We got the contacts. We'll do it.
Hmm.
And I love the fact that dignity went to everyone and the brand took off.
And there's an application of that in every single organization at some level. And when you shared that a few weeks ago, I thought, I need to be more intentional about doing that. And then, in case our listeners don't know, she went from there to take over retail for all of Apple.
I know.
The online store and all the retail stores. She's, and then just recently retired.
Yeah.
She's going to do something else. But yeah, what a fantastic illustration. Hey, that's all the time we have. Tim, this has been so good. And again, for those of you who are listening, Tim, tell them how they can find you online, because these little word pictures he gave us, those four, they're one of how many have you done? 200, 300?
Well, 120. That
120
we have
habitudes.
Yeah.
And habitudes, again, are images around which a leadership lesson is built, and they are the most transferable. And you've just heard four. He's got over 120 more.
Yeah.
So how can we find you, Tim?
Our website is growingleaders.com, growingleaders.com. And our whole goal is to help the established generation really connect with the younger generation. So if that's helpful to you, listener, we'd love to add that.
Growingleaders.com.
Yeah.
And then after you go there, check out andystanley.com for more of this sort of content. And you can find the conversation guides or the application guides to go with today's podcast. And if you would like to have your team members listen to this podcast and listen to Tim, the application guide will help you take a next step in terms of applying it to your specific organization. Thanks so much for joining us. And we will see you next month on the Andy Stanley Leadership Podcast.